You're listening to Allied Health Podcast, talking all things allied health with your hosts, Danielle Whedon, physiotherapist, and Claire Jones, occupational therapist.
In this episode of Allied Health Podcast, we sit down with the team at MediRecruit to discuss all things allied health recruitment for grad therapists. With demand at an all-time high, it's an exciting time for grads with plenty of employment opportunities across most areas of practice. As expert health recruiters, we'll be discussing the current allied health job market for grads and the questions we're commonly asked by grad and early career therapists. Without any further ado, I welcome Danielle Whedon, Director at MediRecruit and Qualified Physio, to the mic. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you. I'm back.
Along with Eleanor Dwyer, ARPA Registered Physio and Specialist Recruiter at MediRecruit. Welcome, Elle.
Thank you.
And for those of you who don't know me, I'm Claire Jones, Qualified Occupational Therapist and also a Director at MediRecruit. So to kick things off, Dan, what are we going to cover in today's episode?
Yes, today we thought we'd bring this episode to you to cover the current trends that we're seeing in the recruitment market for graduate and early career therapists. We're going to run through some of the common questions that we get asked at MediRecruit as specialist recruiters. We're going to cover questions that we get asked, like, what should I look for in a grad role? Can I apply for more than one graduate role? How long should my CV be? Do I need to write a cover letter? Should I include my referees on a CV? How do I prepare for an interview, and questions around, can I work as a graduate in the UK?
Fantastic. So what trends are we currently seeing in grad recruitment? Do you want to kick this off, Dan?
Yeah, so we've been in the market, the industry, for many years now, and in the last 3 to 5 years, we've never seen a higher demand for graduates across most areas of practice. In particular, in the last 3 years, we've seen a huge increase in demand for graduates within the disability sector, both in clinic-based roles as well as community-based roles, and also in hybrid community roles with hubs to do face-to-face in clinics as well.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing a lot of jobs for grads in different clinic settings. So for OTs and speechies, most of these clinic settings are around pediatric clients. Whereas for physio, as it traditionally has been, there's lots of general musculoskeletal private practice roles. But I think more recently we're seeing grads have the opportunity to work in more specialised clinics with more support from senior practitioners. So some of the areas we're seeing grads kind of move into specialties are Pilates, neuro clinics, paediatric clinics, and even some smaller areas like TMJ and facial pain.
And when it comes to aged care, with the recent changes to funding, the funding model, I should say, we've seen a significant reduction in opportunities for grads in residential aged care facilities. But we have seen an increase in community-based aged care roles.
We've also seen a new opportunity for grads to work in occupational rehab roles, so moving straight into that from their studies. And there's also opportunities for grads to work as on-site physios in occupational settings as well.
Yeah, and some of our OT grads have often done undergrad placements in OC rehab, too, so are tending to move straight into that area of specialty from university.
And I just want to touch on opportunities in the UK for grads. There are permanent roles for grads in the UK, but if you're looking to locum in the UK, it's best to have a minimum of 12 months experience. And I'll come back to this a little later on in the podcast. So, Danielle, let's move on to the common questions that we're asked by grads. We've been doing this for a long time now. Over 20 years, haven't we, Danielle? And yeah. There is a real common theme in the questions that we get asked by grads.
Yeah, without a doubt. I also did publish a LinkedIn article on this as well, so feel free to have a look on my LinkedIn profile for some of these questions as well. But common questions that we do get asked by graduates is, very broadly, what should I look for as a graduate in my first graduate role?
The number one, there's a lot to assess in when you're weighing up which grad role is right for you. And I think really the most important thing is the area of practice you decide to start your career in. So in any grad role that you take, you're going to pick up a lot of skills that can transfer into any other area of practice. However, I think it's really important to take a grad role in an area that's of interest and an area that you enjoy, because this is really going to maximize your chances of succeeding in your grad year. And it's important to choose a setting as well that you're personally well suited to. So you've got to weigh up whether you want to work clinic-based, hospital-based, community-based, or even a combination of both, you know, out in the community and working from a hub as well.
Yeah, and just further to that, I think the next most important factor to consider with your grad role is choosing a role that's going to have the most supervision and support available to you, so you are going to also be successful in that role and feel confident with the responsibilities that you have. And supervision needs to be established during the interview process, so you're really clear on what you're going to be given when you start in the role. And it can look very different from role to role, workplace to workplace.
Yeah, it can. And you'll find that some organisations have very, very structured induction and supervision. And we commonly see that sometimes it's just smaller private practices that don't have such a formal structure, but the supervision and mentoring on offer in those practices is fantastic, because it commonly involves a lot of shadowing. So, you know, as Els mentioned, this is something it's really important to discuss this at interview level and before you make your decision as to whether or not you're going to take a role. You need to know exactly what supervision is provided, who's giving you the supervision. So is it an experienced therapist? How much experience do they have, and how regularly you'll be receiving that supervision? And at a minimum, you need at least weekly supervision as a grad.
Yeah, and I think with more graduate roles being community disability based, it's really important if you're in a role that's fairly autonomous that you know that you've got supervision accessible at either via telephone or virtually regularly as well. And we're also seeing some really awesome private practices that have got, for example, mirrored clinic rooms, so that you can actually view and watch an experienced therapist in practice and learn on the spot that way as well.
And professional development as well. You need to ascertain what professional development is on offer with a role. Professional development can either be in-house, and or you may be given a professional development allowance to attend external courses. And as a grad, I would say that in-house professional development provided by experienced therapists is as valuable, or even more valuable sometimes at that level, as external courses. So it's just another thing to weigh up.
I guess another new concept to grads is billable hours, and what they are and how many are there in your role and what's included in them, and do they change over time? So that's important to have that discussion during the interview process with the employer as to what will be expected on you in terms of billable hours.
Yeah, definitely. Billable hours can be a new concept for graduates and early career therapists. They tend to be mostly set in place in community disability settings, as well as in occupational rehab. So it's important to know what these billable hours are. Often employers will have reduced billable hour targets for graduate therapists while they're building up to and during their training period and probationary period. So be really clear on what these billable hours are. They can vary between sort of 4 and 6 per day for graduates. You need to ask questions around what is able to be billed for in terms of if there's travel as part of the role. But the main point that when we speak to therapists, we always make is billable hours aren't in place they're not to be afraid of. They're in place for two reasons. They're in place commercially for a business to be able to bill for your working, but they're also in place for your employer to be able to monitor how efficiently you're managing in your role and where they need to support you further to achieve those billable targets. And we will come to this shortly, but also some employers have billable targets in place for you then to earn sort of any bonuses over and above those if that's the commercial setting you're working in.
I'd just like to mention salary here. I think this is something that, without dismissing the cost of living crisis that we're going through at the moment, you'll be offered a base salary with a role, and in addition to that, you'll be paid 11% super at the moment. We're seeing a range of base salaries on offer at the moment. And I would say that you really need to weigh up the level of supervision and support that's on offer with a role as well as the base salary on offer. So don't get blindsided by a really attractive base salary at the expense of supervision and support.
Yeah, absolutely. And also in some of the not-for-profit and government settings, there'll be other perks like salary sacrificing. So just important to understand the entirety of the offer that you're being offered.
Mm. Yeah, just adding on to that, yeah, in terms of salary package, often included in your package is some form of travel allowance if travel is going to be a large part of your role. So in a community setting or in an OC rehab setting where you might be traveling out to see clients to do assessments, there's lots of different travel allowance options that we are seeing. So some have a kilometer reimbursement, others will give you a lump sum, or some may even have a car included. And so based on what that offer is, may increase or decrease that base salary in comparison to other roles.
Mm-hmm. You also need to determine if your tools of the trade are going to be included. So tools of the trade are anything you need to perform the role. So we see these typically, you know, phone, iPad, laptop, and therapy equipment. So it's really important just to determine whether those things are going to be provided by an organisation or a practice, or whether you're going to need to purchase them yourself.
Yeah, that's right. And I think we have already touched on earning above your base salary, and it will depend on the structure of the organisation. And some organisations might not offer bonuses in your grad year, but some will. And it's just important to determine how these are made and paid into your salary, I guess.
Yeah. And also just with regional roles, you may also get offered an accommodation allowance, because you also need to weigh up if you're going to take a role in a regional area and you're going to have to relocate, you're going to have to factor in the cost of relocation and accommodating yourself out in those areas. So just another thing to weigh up.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on from what should I look for in a graduate role to, you've been asked this a lot before, Claire, but can I apply for more than one role at a time?
Yeah, you absolutely can. And it's so common now for grads to be applying and being offered multiple roles. And it's really, really important that you manage this well. The world of allied health is a very small world, and burning bridges or acting unprofessionally, whether you intend to or not, can come back to bite you in the future. So we say that you've got to keep a list of all the roles that you apply for and the associated contact with each role. And I think a great piece of advice is to put the contact and the name of the company in your phone, so that if you get called by an potential employer, you know exactly who's calling and from which company and for what role. It's really good for each role to make a list of your non-negotiables. You know, for example, you know, supervision and support, and only apply for these roles that meet that criteria. It's really good to remain transparent throughout the interview process and negotiation stages as well with with all employers that you've applied for roles with. Employers do expect you to have applied for multiple roles, and it just avoids a situation where when you've gone through a full recruitment process and you decide to decline a role, it just saves some shock and disappointment when this happens if you haven't, you know, disclosed to all employers that you've got multiple applications on the go.
Yeah, and I think all of the employers that we speak with, they are very aware that graduates are in high demand at the moment, so they won't be surprised that you have other interviews or applications out. And I also think, as you mentioned, Claire, it's such a small allied health world that declining professionally a role at also, you know, keeps doors open for future if you want to reconsider an employer. And the other thing I'd say on this is that don't feel pressured or rushed to accept a role as a grad. We're often speaking to grads who say that they've been offered a role and they've got 24 hours to, you know, to accept it or not. But I don't think you should ever feel pressured. I think you need to weigh up the entirety of what's going to suit you. And for an employer that really wants you, they will wait when you've been transparent through the whole process.
Just be wary of taking the first role that you're offered. It's good to weigh up a few options. So I often speak to grads who have signed a contract and then are second guessing that sort of 6 months later as they've undertaken more clinical placements are getting a better idea of you know where their interest lies. So I'm not saying that it's don't do it, but I think you should be very considered before signing a contract very early in the process.
Yeah, I agree. Moving on to the next common question we are asked by grads is how long should my CV be? Elle, would you like to answer that question?
Yeah, sure. I think it's not so important about the length of the CV, but more about content of the information that's on it. So obviously you need your contact information, your qualifications, and your university clinical placements, as well as any other relevant volunteer work and employment. So, for example, if you're an OT wanting a pediatric role and you've done some work with tutoring primary school kids or volunteering with any kind of relevant group, then it's important to showcase that on your CV and to highlight any transferable skills as well. But as a general guide, we aim to have it about 3 to 4 pages, but clear and concise is better than long and lengthy.
Yeah, definitely. And in reverse chronological order is always best as well.
Yeah, we've got a great template for CVs. So if you're looking at putting your CV together, just get in touch and we can give you our template for writing a CV as well as a cover letter.
Yeah, that's right, which is a good segue into the next question we get asked around cover letters and do I need to write a cover letter?
Yes, in short, a cover letter is really important and it gives you a chance to express why you really want the role and to showcase your personality and to highlight why you might align really well to that employer or hiring manager. You can include more information about the details of the job and your relevant experience to those. And if there's any selection criteria that's been outlined in the application process, you should definitely touch on all these areas and provide a detailed example as to how you meet and address the selection criteria. Claire and Dan, you've seen many cover letters. What kind of gives someone's cover letter a bit of extra shine when you come across it?
I think anything that's personal and related to the application is great. So again, I've mentioned it before, but if you've worked in disability support or you've got, you know, you've held a role where there's some great transferable skills, I think it's great to give that a mention.
Yeah.
How about you, Dan?
My key would be to track down, if you don't know who the contact is to track down the contact for the job so that you are addressing a cover letter to a specific person, and it doesn't, it's not just a generic application. So make sure you get that right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
What about referees? Should the next common question we get asked is, do I need to include referees on my CV?
We at MediRecruit advise you not to include referees on your CV for a few reasons. It avoids your referees being contacted unnecessarily, especially if you've applied for multiple roles. It's generous of referees to provide you with a reference. And if you've gone for three or four roles and each of those employers have asked for a reference from them, it's a lot of work. It also gives you the opportunity to notify your referees when they'll be contacted for a reference by a potential employer, and you can outline what the role is so that the reference that they can provide is targeted to that particular role. I would say it's really important though to have your referees in place before you start applying for roles, so you absolutely need to ask for their permission to act as a referee. There's nothing worse than being contacted for a reference without having known that you'd been nominated as a referee. So you need to have 2 to 3 referees lined up. As students, I would advise you to approach clinical supervisors to act as a referee. But again, coming back to other relevant employment, you can also use a referee from any employment you've had while you've been at university.
Yeah, and if it's not clear, aside from clinical supervisors, any non-clinical employment that you've got, any referees from that environment are able to attest to your other skills like punctuality, you know, leave taking, organisation skills, other skills that are non-clinical, but that will relate to any role that you're going for. We'll move on to how do I prepare for an interview, and then Claire's going to cover off working in the UK as a grad. So Els, a lot of the time we get asked for how do you prepare for an interview as a grad?
Yeah, and one of the most important things that what we can help you out with, if you're not in touch with a recruiter in the process, you can ask the hiring team, is to get your hands on a position description of the role. And that way you can read it really thoroughly and make sure you have a really good understanding of what the role is and the responsibilities in the role. And that will help you prepare for questions about it in the interview. Also make sure you get the names and positions of the people interviewing you. Once you've got that, you can Google them and put them in LinkedIn and do some research on them as well, so you understand who is interviewing you. That will also help you prepare for some questions that they might ask you. You can also ask the interviewer what type of questions you can expect in the interview. And these can range anywhere from kind of an informal, just a general chat, to something more structured, clinical focused, or behavioral type questions. So depending on the background of who's interviewing you will help you also understand what types of questions. So if they're a clinician, expect clinical questions. If they're a manager, you might expect more behavioral type questions. And there's always some really key topics that they'll cover off, including time management skills, general organization, and communication strategies. So they're really easy to prepare for and good to have examples ready to go, as well as really researching the company that you're going for and knowing what their values are and the types of clients that they see, so you can be really ready to answer any questions around the company specific.
Yeah, we I think all three of us would be the same, but if you think about all of the companies and therapists we work with, there are so many different types of interviews, so it's sort of hard to say exactly what will happen. But if you're clear in preparing and asking the questions of what the format will be, that'll stand you in good stead to perform as well as you can at interview stage.
Yeah, the more prepared you are, the better you're going to perform and the more confident you'll be going into it as well.
Preparation really settles the nerves, doesn't it?
And also I think as well, it's easy to think, you know, I'm really nervous. It's me being interviewed, but it's also your chance to go and see if it's a role for you and an employer that you want to work with. So I think also taking questions that to interview that you want to know and information that you need to find out, it's a two-way street. So that's also important.
And as well, the interview process, the recruitment process from start to finish gives you a really good insight into how an organisation operates. So it's to stand back and observe the interview process. Is it organised? Are they friendly? Are they welcoming? Are they supportive? All those sorts of things reflect the organisation that you're potentially going to enjoy. And another thing I just add, I know we're talking about interviewing, but another great thing to do is to ask if you can visit the practice or the organisation and spend a couple of hours meeting the staff and potentially sitting in on a session, because that'll give you some really good insight into the role as well and the organisation.
Yeah, definitely. And we've got a good preparing for interview guide as well as our CV and cover letter template. So give us a buzz if you're keen to find out a bit more about that. Now, Claire, finally, a very common question we get asked when we're presenting at universities and from early career therapists is, can I work in the UK as a graduate?
Yes, we often ask this question. So as a graduate, you can work in the UK, but you're more likely to secure permanent work without too much difficulty rather than locum work. So locum work really needs a minimum of 6 months experience, and this actually ties in with gaining registration in the UK as well. But we recommend that you have a minimum of 12 months experience before you head to the UK. It just gives you time to build up some confidence clinically and also hone those generic skills like time management and organisation and problem solving and those sorts of things. When you work in locum roles in the UK, you are expected to a certain extent to hit the ground running. So 12 months experience is going to put you in a better position to handle that transition. The good news is around working in the UK is that the youth mobility visa, the working holiday visa for the UK, has just been extended from 2 years to 3 years for Australian citizens aged between 18 and it was 30, but it's been increased to 35. So what this means is if you're really keen to work in the UK as a grad, you could go over and take a permanent role for 12 months and then locum for 2 years if you wish to do so. But we regularly run working in the UK information sessions. They're held in the evenings we try and make it around 8 o'clock after everyone's been to work and done their exercise and had dinner. And it's just a really relaxed chat about working in the UK. So if you follow us on our socials and on LinkedIn, or just you can just get in touch to ask when the next one's coming up. And if you're looking for a grad opportunity, or if you're further along in your career and want to know, you know, what's out there for you, please don't hesitate to get in touch. As I mentioned, also, we've got some really great free resources around cover letters, CVs, preparing for interviews. So get in touch for that information as well.
Yeah, definitely. And you're already listening to us now, but the first season of Allied Health Podcast is dedicated to graduates. So have a listen to that too. There's some short, sharp episodes on different topics which you can have a look at.
So thanks for joining us today. Please get in touch if you need us. Thanks, Elle. Thanks, Danielle.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Allied Health Podcast. In the show's notes, you'll find links to our free recruitment resources, job opportunities, and healthcare marketplace insights. To listen to new episodes, please subscribe via Apple, Google, or wherever you find your favourite podcasts. And if you've enjoyed the show, please give it a 5-star rating and review, and be sure to tell your therapy colleagues and friends to tune in.